The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have world-famous Dr. Pablo Molina. He is the CIO of the Association of American Law Schools and also an award-winning professor at Georgetown University. He teaches in the Technology Management Program. It's a pleasure getting you in the studio here, Dr. Molina. How are you today?
I'm doing great, John. Thank you very much for having me here, and thank you to your listeners for being here as well.
So you're scratching your heads and going, well, God, this guy works for a trade association and he teaches at Georgetown. He's probably real smart, but what's he got to do with me? Well, Pablo, many of my listeners work for the federal government and they're trying to get promoted. Or they're working for the federal government and they're trying to learn maybe cloud technology or cybersecurity so they can use their assets in a better manner for their agency. And they're looking and going, gee, should I go to school at Johns Hopkins? Should I take an online course? Should I just go to the Khan Academy? What is Coursera stuff? What about Blackboard? And so what we're going to do today is we're going to step back from our normal tech talk and we're going to talk about maybe learning technology and online learning and the strengths and weaknesses of different methods out there, because Dr. Molina not only has a PhD in computer science, he has taught electronic courses and he has taken electronic courses. So he has a pretty good perspective on many aspects of learning online and maybe talk a little about the Georgetown program and the other programs that are available in the area. But before we begin, I'd like Pablo to maybe talk a little about his background. He's accomplished many things for a relatively young man. Tell us about your background, please, Dr. Molina.
Well, I'm happy too. I have a doctoral degree from Georgetown University about the adoption of technology in higher education. And I also have a number of technology certifications in privacy and information security. Most of my life, I've been a technology leader, a chief information officer in higher education institutions in the United States, as well as corporations in Europe. And I've done consulting for many organizations, both in the United States and in countries like Spain, Colombia, and Mexico.
If you go to his LinkedIn profile, you see a whole list of awards. It's like, geez, I wish I had maybe one of those or two of those. But so he's an award-winning scholar and award-winning professional. So he has a pretty good expect. You know, the question here is, what about the quality? Okay. And I always ask that. You know, there's an online course on tap dancing, and I wonder what the quality is. Well, Pablo can have a good perspective in saying, well, I've taken a look at this Coursera course, and qualitatively, this is a strength, this is the weakness. And that's what I want to start off with. Maybe we can do is set the stage, paint the picture, Pablo. People have heard of Coursera and maybe Khan and EDX. Tell us briefly about these different categories and where they all fit in for my listeners.
John, the internet has opened incredible educational opportunities to those of us who have the money and the knowledge to take advantage of them. Some are free, some are for a fee. You can learn anything from how to play chess or the guitar to how to build your website or a rocket. I would like to discuss free services like the massive online open courses. You may have heard the word MOOCs. Bait and hook services like vendor webinars, fee services like lynda.com, and traditional distance learning programs like online master's degrees. They all come in a variety of formats and also a variety of quality.
And, you know, I'm an old geezer compared to you, and I remember there used to be things called correspondence courses back in the 1920s and 30s, and had a very low completion rate. People would learn how to type or learn how to play the piano or different kind of correspondence courses. And in World War II, they would train people with movies, and now we're training people on the internet, and there's strengths and weaknesses of all of these. Let's just talk about some of these. Many of my listeners are involved in technology, and they have certificates from the PMI, Project Management Institute. Where does that fit in? Do they do courses online, Pablo? Or many of my listeners I know have PMI certificates, good, bad, and different. What do you think?
Well, I think that online opportunities for certificates is one of the greatest success stories. Let me give you some numbers so we understand the size of this distance learning market. In 2012, the TED Talks, those 18-minute or less famous online lectures, reached 1 billion views.
That's a B, huh? Wow.
With a B. The Khan Academy has over 10 million students per month who are watching online micro lectures and doing problems on math, history, and other subjects. Coursera, a massive online open online course provider, has surpassed 10 million learners. And Miriada X, which is another MOOC provider, but this one in Spanish, is almost at 1 million. And yet, as you pointed out before, completion rates for most MOOCs are estimated by a number of research studies between 4 and 10%. These are extremely low numbers. But because they're free, the fact that you didn't finish doesn't mean that you did not learn anything. I've taken four MOOC courses already, and only one I was able to finish just last week, networked live from the University of Pennsylvania about how social networks and human networks and computer networks work. And I confess, it was very difficult to do it. In spite of the convenience of taking the course at 4 a.m. in the morning, which is when I have available time, I had to fight a busy life, and I had to fight the fact that not all of the lectures were equally interesting throughout the course.
My wife is taking an online course right now. And she lives and dies by Saturday night at midnight, where she has to turn in all her reports and everything else. And I've been in a classroom, and I tell you what, I like looking at a student's face, and if I say 1 and 1 is 5, and they're shocked, I can get a reaction out of them instead of 1 and 1 is 2. And, you know, I think it's a challenge to present things in a two-dimensional manner, isn't it?
You are correct. Right now, the technologies that we have available and the production and pedagogical resources to do online training are far from perfect. And this detracts from the educational experience. So I would argue that still, when possible, there's nothing like meeting face-to-face with classmates and with faculty members to engage into a learning program. Yet many of us don't have that luxury of being able to devote the time and the travel resources to do so. So here, online learning gives us the opportunity to engage in educational opportunities that otherwise would not be available to us. Quite personal, I still think that if you were to choose a format, in my opinion, the best format is a hybrid one, one by which some of the content is shared, delivered, and exchanged online outside of the classroom, and the other one where you happen to meet together with classmates and faculty members in order to exchange ideas face-to-face.
You know, in December, I'll be doing some corporate training for a very, very large accounting company, and I'm going to send them a worksheet ahead of time that they have to complete before I ever walk into that workshop. So going in, they're going to have to do things ahead of time, possibly online, possibly just with paper. But this blended approach is not bad, and I think that's the challenge of designing a courses like that. Let's take one Coursera. Tell me about Coursera. What's that all about, and what's your evaluation of that?
Well, Coursera is one of the big, massive online course providers. Quite honestly, the leading one in terms of users right now. And they offer a variety of courses by some of the most prestigious universities in the United States as well as abroad. They have millions of viewers or learners, as they describe them. Now, the interesting thing about a company like Coursera, it's still very unclear, because the courses are free. How are they making money, or how do they plan to be sustainable in the long run? In the short run, the institutions who are participating in this Coursera effort are just gaining reputation, and the faculty members are also improving their reputation when they happen to teach to a large number of students. But some of the freedom of information access requests for the contracts between public universities and Coursera have indicated that they expect to make money out of advertising revenues, out of giving certificates and badges to some of the attendees and charging them for those, and also sometimes by offering the names of the top performers in the courses, particularly
Whoa,
the technical ones, to companies.
That sounds like a little dirty dealing there, doesn't it?
You know, it does. I also served on the board of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, an organization in Washington, D.C., where we are concerned about protecting the public's privacy. And some of our concerns are that many of these new educational companies seem to have very questionable data protection practices.
Interesting. So I guess Stanford was the university behind the initial founding of Coursera. Is that right?
Yes. Stanford has been at the heart of the MOOC revolution. For example, in 2012, Stanford University President John Hennessy likened the MOOC development to a tsunami. And he said, "What I told my colleagues is there is a tsunami coming. I can't tell you exactly how it's going to break, but my goal is to try to surf it, not to stand there.
You know, I have raised three children, and I guess I can make some sage observations. Some children are internally motivated, and they will, let's say, make their bed and clean their room, and some children aren't. I think there are human beings that are internally motivated that will take a course, have the discipline to go online and learn and listen to lectures and write the papers, and some that don't. I think the structure of a classroom might fit in a different learning style, different type. So what the guy in Stanford is saying is that, well, let's disregard learning styles. It's going to be a whole lot more important than that. Let's take a break, Pablo. When we come back, we'll talk more about Coursera and maybe compare it with Khan Academy and other opportunities out there for online learning and see which ones will benefit my listeners the most. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dr. Pablo Molina, CIO of the Association of American Law Schools, an adjunct professor at Georgetown University Technology Management Program. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Dr. Pablo Molina, CIO, Association of American Law Schools, an adjunct professor, Georgetown University Technology Management Program. He has won many awards for his technical proficiency and awards for his teaching proficiency as well. I thought he'd be a good fellow to drag in here and get in front of a microphone and talk about online learning. I've got listeners that, you know, maybe want to qualify for some PMI certification or for some security certifications. The SANS Institute offers a lot of courses. And what is the value of taking an online course? We start off by talking about the massive number of people on these massive online courses, and they're called MOOCs, Massive Open Online Course. We talked a little bit about Coursera. Tell me, Dr. Molina, how do you compare something like Coursera with Udacity? Similar, different?
Well, Coursera is basically an aggregator of provider of courses offered by some of the most interesting and notable universities in the United States and abroad. Udacity, on the other hand, is one of the early companies that was founded, one of the largest MOOC providers as well. And its CEO, Sebastian Thrun, which also considered the godfather of MOOCs, recently confessed that his company's courses are often a lousy product. So one of the twists for Udacity has been to switch their focus from college-level courses and to focus more on corporate training, on being able to do project management, web design, coding, and many other things. So I think there's been already a distinction. Some of the providers like Coursera or edX are really focusing on the higher education market. They started with the technical disciplines, cryptography, computer science, and now are branching more into the humanities. Whereas Udacity seems to have taken a turn towards more corporate training.
Yeah, when I think of West Coast, I think of Coursera and Udacity. When I think of the East Coast, I think of Harvard and EDX and Khan. Is that a kind of good classification? Where does EDX fit in? How does it differentiate itself from Coursera?
I think they're very similar. It's just that EDX was created as a consortium of some of the most prestigious academic institutions in the United States, and others have been joining. Coursera had a more democratic approach, meaning that they accept many other universities that are not necessarily part of the EDX consortium. Both of them are great resources, and I've taken courses from both of them. One of the questions that audience members may have, well, how do I know what courses to take? And some of these companies or organizations are listing on their websites which ones are the most popular courses, usually based on the number of past attendees, the interest of audience members in the topics, and also based sometimes on the reputation of the institution offering the courses. There are even some clever entrepreneurs, like the ones for Class Central, who act as an aggregator and list all the courses that are offered by different providers, and that way you have a bird's view of all the courses that are available at any given time.
Let's talk about the school that's 2 miles from here, Georgetown University. So my kids can apply and get in Georgetown University and get a bachelor's degree. We know that. There are working professionals that can go to Georgetown and get a law degree. We know that. They can also get degrees in technology management. So from the perspective of one of my listeners, Pablo, what is the value of maybe a course at Georgetown University or maybe a master's at Georgetown versus some of these online courses? How'd you compare them?
Well, Georgetown University has been around since 1789, and it was only lately and slowly that it embraced distance learning. First with continuing education programs starting in 2001, and then with online master's degrees in nursing, for example, in 2012, and also now with a new online master's degree in technology management. I have been teaching in this technology management program on the ground for about 5 years. And after experimenting with some hybrid courses online and on the ground, I think that we're ready now for this program online. The advantage of the program online is that for those people who find it very difficult to drive to our brand new campus in Chinatown once a week or once every 2 weeks for a weekend course, instead, they can take some of the courses online, which may fit better with their personal and professional schedules. And certainly the advantage of this, we know that there are many people who are in other parts of the United States very interested in taking their education forward with Georgetown or some other institutions that offer distance learning programs. This opens the doors for them to be able to do so.
I teach a marketing course, and I teach about Google Analytics, and so I've taken all the Google tests. Now, what Google does is it says, learn the stuff on your own. You take this test, and you'll be certified for 18 months, and then you take the test again, and there's four different categories of tests to take, and they don't care how you learn it. And so my experience with online learning has been taking a very targeted, focused course, or not even a course, kind of learning it yourself and taking a test and try to adapt to it. I think there's strengths and weaknesses to all of them. I guess what I'm trying to conclude is that I think every single person listening to the show should sit back and try to evaluate what's the best use of their time and how can they maximize and leverage it. Maybe it's online, maybe it's face-to-face. And I just have a basis towards, I guess, face-to-face discussion in the classroom. So in teaching, and you've taught online courses, how do you encourage interaction between and among students?
Teaching online is challenging, and many of us who have been teaching on the ground for years, we think that we just can take our teaching skills and transfer those to an online environment. This is not true. In my experience, it takes much more preparation to teach online because you have to have all the engaging and compelling materials for the students ahead of time, and you can't improvise. So basically, you're trying to find a way for them to read the material, watch the material, to interact with it, and then to interact with each other. So there are usually, common techniques that help you build interaction. You ask students, for example, to read something and also to comment on what they have read and also to comment on the comments by all other students. I would argue that the pedagogical resources that we have and even the technology resources for distance learning can be much improved. One of the things where we're missing a lot still today is the ability to have interactive learning materials. And the idea is the following. If you take a quiz after watching an online lecture and you miss one of the answers, what would be ideal would be for the computer to tell you, listen, you missed the answer in this way, you answer B. And most of the people who answer B for this question is because they harbor a misconception regarding this particular topic. You may want to go back and review it. I think that would be a terrific tool, but most of us have not developed them because they're very difficult, much more challenging to develop than a standard quiz.
If you'd like more information at the university where Pablo teaches, you can go to scs.georgetown.edu. That's the School for Continuing Studies, and you can click on technology management and review the courses that are offered and they aren't offered. I was reading a magazine from George Mason University, and they were honoring one of the graduates named Dusty Wentz. Dusty did an electronic MBA. And he was working full-time running a company. He did his electronic MBA, and he was so successful with it, he donated $100,000 to the school. That's how much he liked his online learning program. That seems strange to me. Does that seem normal to you, Pablo?
Well, what people can do with distance learning is absolutely mind-boggling. For example, in 2011, I traveled to the Kakuma refugee camp in northern Kenya to help set up computer labs so that refugees could study online for an associate's degree from Regis University in Colorado. I mentor and I gave internships online to some of the students there. This was a very rewarding experience. If these people with very limited resources and education can do this, imagine what those of us with more resources and more education can do by taking advantage of distant learning resources. And by the way, if you want to make donations to universities, well, what can I say? My home university is open for business.
It certainly is. I look out the window here. I see people walking by with dogs. And there's a proverbial phrase that a dog is worth more with papers than without papers, you know. And I apply that to the world of online learning and badges and certificates. And so do these Coursera, Khan, do they give certificates or badges? Or what do they give and how do they evaluate people like that?
You know, some of them have those offerings by which you get a badge and you get a certificate. And they're trying to have some rules so that they know that you are the person who took the course and also you are the person who took the exams in order to get that certification. Now, still, the value of the certification rests in the market. I mean, how much are employers valuing the fact that you have taken a number of MOOC courses and online courses? In the case of traditional institutions, right now in many programs, they no longer distinguish whether you took your MBA online or on site because they stand behind their products. They have the same faculty teach both programs, and that way they make sure that all of them are equally good for attendees.
We're going to have to take a break here. We're talking about how online learning can benefit my listeners, you know, federal information technology professionals, and where it fits in with their career plan and whether or not it can help them at all. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Dr. Pablo Molina, CIO at the Association of American Law Schools and adjunct professor, Georgetown University Technology Management Program. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Dr. Pablo Molina, CIO, Association of American Law Schools and adjunct professor, Georgetown University Technology Management Program. He has won awards for his technical competency and his teaching. He has taken online courses and given online courses. I thought he'd have a great perspective for my listeners to maybe evaluate and try to see, well, geez, should I take this course online or should I actually go pay for the Sans Institute course over in Bethesda there? Or should I go to an event and get a paid course there? Is it free? I mean, there's so many free courses available. Maybe it's good. So, Pablo, so let's get these two words out, F-R-E-E, a four-letter word, and F-E-E, a three-letter word. So we're talking about four-letter words here, Pablo. What compare the two, and what's the value?
Well, let me start by saying that some free services are not really free. On the internet, if you are not paying for something, you are not the customer, you are the product. And basically, these companies are going to use this information in order to sell you more services or to sell your data to advertisers. For example, I do not really want anybody to know that I flunked out of three MOOC courses.
Mm.
Oops, that cat may be out of the bag now. So the main thing with these ones, for example, when vendors offer seminars to tell you about problems with information security or how you can do better time management or how can you can manage your projects better or use your data better, well, many of those, you know, they're going to be followed by a sales call where they're going to try to sell you additional materials, their products and services, registration to a conference. It is part of the price we pay for some of these free services. Quite honestly, I like some of the fee services, the one where the proposition exchange is very clear. They're charging you something in exchange for the materials that they have. Now, in this model, the users pay for watching content, and many of them offer access to additional resources like exercises, screencasts, simulations, problems that are not available in any of the competing free offerings. Now, many of these services, but not all, offer very high quality content and productions. Some examples are places like websites like lynda.com, Code School,
Sans Institute, Lynda. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sans Institute for Information Security, PMI, as you mentioned, for project management, and even some that are not technical, like the great courses where they take very good faculty members and do a very high quality production so that they teach some of the best courses ever taught about any subject.
Yes, it's funny. My son listens to opera, and he went to the library and he got courses about opera, and he listens to opera and tries to figure it out. He figures that's the best way is to listen, have someone lecture, and go along with it. And he really truly wants to learn about that, independent of getting a certificate or a degree or anything else. There are people who are exploring this, and these terms are thrown out there, you know, and I throw out terms to LMS, learning management system, learning environment. Hey, what about this Blackboard stuff, Moodle? So what is all this Moodle and Blackboard and learning how do these fit into the game?
One of the key components when you're offering a course, both online and on the ground, is to have a platform, a repository for all the course content. This is where you post the syllabus or the plan for the course, where you post any of the materials that students need to access. Oftentimes, where students are going to engage in class discussions, in a discussion board, maybe there would be an associated blog for them to post their comments and everything else. These learning management systems, which are intrinsic and integral to the educational process these days, are made by different companies, or some of them are created through an open source model where developers contribute to these software products. Some of the most common ones out there are companies like Blackboard, or Instructure, which has a product called Canvas. And there are also open source ones like Moodle. So whenever you are taking some of these courses, you're going to be using, in order to get your materials, one of these particular platforms. Now, there are a couple of them that I'd like to share with you about. And those allow you not only to be recipients of material, but also to contribute and create your own courses for those of you who have something to teach to the world. One of them, if you'd like to visit that online, is called openlearning.com, and you can create and host courses right there. Of course, you can also do the same just by going to YouTube and creating a course on how to do something that you know how to do in a novel or innovative way. The other one for which I'd like to keep an eye is MOOC.org. which is a partnership between Google and edX to help build and host courses for the world.
Hmm. And so in many different languages, or based primarily on English, or how does that play out as far as languages go?
Well, still most of the open online courses are in English. The majority of the content for the internet in general is in English. But there are many other countries that are catching up. So, for example, for a fee, some of the big open universities, like the Open University in the United Kingdom, have had a great success training people from all over the world. There's big universities in Spanish, like the Oberta de Cataluña from Spain, where they have trained people all over the world in the Spanish language. And many others in German and French or Chinese are coming on board. Which is something very interesting. If you know some of these languages, maybe in order to improve both your knowledge of the language and the subject matter, you may be inclined to experiment and take one of these courses in a language other than English. Bon chance, buena suerte, good luck with that.
Boa sorte no Brasil, eh? That's how they'd say it in Brazil. So let's look at Georgetown University. So I can go to Georgetown University and do an evening MBA. I can do an evening master's degree in technology management. Okay. It's possibilities for me to take online courses where I can get possibly a master's degree online, or take many courses online from a recognized university. Or I can go to something like the Sans Institute, get a face-to-face course, or take a course online. There seems to be many, many different ways to do this. And so if Sans Institute offers a course on CISSP certification, they may use Blackboard as the vehicle to deliver it and to bill for it and to make sure the completion. So you have the course, the academic, the theoretic stuff, and Moodle and Blackboard would actually be the tools to implement some of that learning. Is that where Blackboard fits in?
That is correct. Whether it's for profit or for free, whether it's a course or a small seminar, whenever you have a combination of materials that you need to share with the students, and whenever you need to interact with the students in the form of quizzes, discussion boards, and other information, you will find at the heart of the enterprise a learning and management system. And as you pointed out, Blackboard is one of the popular choices, but there are many others. Some of the success by some of the providers, companies like 2U, which partners with prestigious universities to offer very targeted programs, have built their own, a combination of a social networking platform and a learning management system, so that they can offer a very unique experience. The idea also is that even if you have a hybrid program where there is online and on the ground teaching, that you have a flipped classroom, that you devote the classroom time for the things that are truly important for the personal interaction, and everything else you ask people to prepare ahead of time so that they can come with the best preparation for the class discussions.
So I do my when I do my corporate training in December, and I have my people complete these templates ahead of time, I'm flipping the classroom on them. I'm having them do work before the classroom, so when they get in the classroom, I can take and maximize that three-hour period I got them there, and I don't have to worry about the details. I don't have to worry about, you know, how do you spell your last name? We got it all written down there. We know exactly where we're heading, and it can be more impactful. I can see, if done properly, it can really have a lot of power in that punch, but it has to be done very carefully.
Listen, I'm taking an in-person first aid CPR course here in Washington, D.C. on Monday. And in preparation for that, they gave me not only a bunch of online lectures to watch, but also a book that I must read before showing up for the classroom. And by doing this, instead of spending 8 hours in the training program, I will only have to spend three. And they claim that the educational outcome will be the same, which means I'll be able to save somebody else's life if the circumstances present themselves to do so.
It almost seems like a hybrid approach or a mixed approach, whether they call it a flipped classroom or a blended approach or something. Maybe the best of both worlds. Who knows? It's changing real quickly here. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about a little about social media, talk about some of the programs we've been involved in, and I'm going to give you a test to see if you're, in fact, a card-carrying nerd. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Dr. Pablo Molina, CIO, Association of American Law Schools, adjunct professor, Georgetown University Technology Management Program. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Dr. Pablo Molina. He's the CIO of Association of American Law Schools, and also an adjunct professor, an award-winning adjunct professor at Georgetown University Technology Management Program. You're listening to that introduction saying, well, what's he doing on Federal Talk Radio? Well, many of my listeners are trying to get promoted. Maybe they're trying to learn about cybersecurity, possibly other types of information they want to find out about. And they're considering doing online courses. And they're kind of confused of what's the value, what's the not value, what does it cost, what is it not cost, what are the general categories out there. And we spent a little bit of time talking about Coursera and MOOCs and Stanford and different schools and whatnot. And so there's a lot of information there. One way that many of my listeners like to get information is through Twitter. My Twitter handle is @RayGilray. I guess Georgetown TM's got a Twitter handle too. Is that right? What is it? Is it @GeorgetownTM? Yeah, so you can follow them there and get information about the world-famous Dr. Pablo Molina. And the reason I say he's world-famous is he's got a TED Talk, doesn't he? What about your TED Talk?
Well, John, one of the highlights of my speaking experience was giving a 2011 TEDx Talk at Georgetown University, which was called The Internet and Virtual Aliens. And it was about how immigrants use the internet to stay connected to their cultural origins, how Americans traveling abroad use the internet to find a peanut butter in other countries, and how people like me from Spain use the internet in the United States in order to watch flamenco shows. Now, this talk has almost as many views as my rendition of Ricky Martin's Living La Vida Loca, also at Georgetown University to fundraise for Hurricane Katrina relief efforts. And I'm preparing a new TEDx talk, this time in Colombia, at the prestigious Universidad de La Sabana in January. And I will be speaking there about pedagogical innovations.
Not just a scholar. As I look out the window, we can look and see Pablo's motorcycle, can't we? Right from the window here. He arrived here in a motorcycle. Probably the first guest out of 386 to ride his motorcycle to an interview. So we've got a real character here. Many people are going, well, geez, this guy seems to know all this stuff. TED Talks and PhD. And I wonder if he's really a nerd or not. And so what I have designed, Pablo, is a scientific 10-question test that's going to define once and for all whether or not you are a card-carrying nerd. Are you ready to answer these tough questions? First one. So I break into your house tonight. How many old-school desktops do I find just floating around your house?
None.
That's the right answer.
But I have a very old 10-year-old Apple laptop.
No, maybe that gets more points, and as long as it's not ever plugged in. Number of cell phones you personally have purchased in the last year?
You know, none. I've been fortunate enough to have cell phones paid for by my employers.
Okay. You're not a card carrying. Okay. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do. It's at Pablo G. Molina. And today, for example, I tweeted about Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, coming out of the closet for the value of diversity in technology.
And do you have a personal blog?
I do have a website for an organization that I'm starting called the International Applied Ethics and Technology Association. And the website is www.iaeta.org.
Great, great, great. And what kind of smartphone do you have?
Well, I still have my iPhone 5S, and I'm growing my hand and changing my wardrobe so I can buy an iPhone 6.
I got to grow that hand. Now, what's the most popular app on that phone you've used in the last month?
Well, quite honestly, I am truly a geek, and what I use my cell phone for, my mobile phone, when I have extra time, I play chess on my phone.
Ooh, now that's nerd points. That's real nerd points. And we break into your house again. How many tablet devices do we find there?
You only find one is my trustworthy iPad, my cracked screen iPad. And I think that the cracked screen brings character to this device.
Would you like it cracked or uncracked? And what was your most recent post on a social networking site?
Well, I think as I mentioned this morning, I posted about Tim Cook's coming out of the closet.
Good.
But also on diversity, I posted a couple of days ago about the fact that in the boards of the large technology companies, there is a handful of minority board members, a couple of Hispanic, a couple of African-Americans, one Hispanic with whom I share last names. Hector Garcia Molina serves on the board of Oracle. We are not related, but I would love to join him there.
I'm sure. Do you have a mobile fitness device on you? Are you wearing any mobile fitness devices?
You know, I don't. Once again, I'm very interested in protecting my privacy. Ooh. Sometimes I run very well or play tennis or golf. Sometimes my performance is not up to par and I don't want anybody to find out.
Last book you read was electronic or paper?
The last book I read was, I finished this morning, was a paper book.
Well, this is a mixed bag. I'm going to have to run this through my UNIVAC computer in my basement and print something out in my green bar and find out if you're a card-carrying nerd or not. A lot of strengths, a lot of weaknesses here. You're right in the gray zone here. I don't know what grade to give you on this. That's a tough one here. We just have about a minute left here, Pablo. So give me a quick forecast for federal government and distance learning and remote learning. Think they're going to adapt to it, not adapt, or is it going to be effective for them?
I mean, listen, I think that as citizens, as civil servants, as human beings, we have an obligation in order to learn more, to do our jobs better, but also to grow professionally and personally. And I think that distance learning is going to be a great avenue for us to accumulate that knowledge that we think is going to help us do our jobs better and do better in life. So I strongly recommend that everybody starts taking online courses. You know, pace yourself, find the right courses and the right programs, and with that, grow in your career and your personal life. I also, once again, like to encourage people to consider contributing to the online courses, to post your YouTube video on how you've learned to do something in a very unique way, and also to consider being a guest lecturer in online courses as well as in-person courses. In other words, give back to society some of the things you've learned in your professional and personal lives.
That's great advice for everyone, including my students. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Pablo Molina, CIO, Association of American Law Schools, and adjunct professor, Georgetown University Technology Management Program. Thank you, Pablo.
It was a pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.